It was the Marvel Torch. Action Hour.
Yeah.
Outer Space Adventure.
Yeah.
They got hit by cosmic rays.
And then I watched.
The thing is such a grump. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, boys, we ready to start this?
We are.
This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Welcome back to Indie Comic Book Noise. Faithful listeners, you're in for a treat. The full slate of all four hosts are here today. Welcome you in. Ugh. Welcome you. Man, we're just going to have to my brain. Yeah. Control Alt Delete on my AI brain. Welcome back, Indie Comic Book Noise. All four hosts. Yes, me, Andrew the Daily Rabbit. Who really cares? Up in Canada, our two favorite Canadians, WWX Kevin in the icebox. Say hi, Kevin.
Hello, everyone.
And from the nation's capital, the Ottawa Otter.
Hello.
And lastly, our treat from the state capital in the bunker, Super Steve.
No, he's back full time now. He's here all the time now.
That's weird.
I think I missed one recently, though, right? But anyway, back in the clown car. Woohoo!
The check must have cashed.
Indie Comic Book Noise is part of the Deliberate Noise Network. Check out all the fine podcasts and other related accoutrements. As always, thanks to Derek Coward, who runs the entire thing, handles it all, make sure we're up and online. We literally would not exist but for his munificent efforts. And among those wonderful shows, you can catch Marvel Noise. About all the things from the House of Mouse, Disney's imprint, Marvel Comics, starring our own Super Steve. Super Steve, how's that Marvel noise going?
That Marvel noise is going great, Andrew.
Check that out, folks.
True believer.
Here, you can check out our show notes and old episodes on our website, IndieComicBookNoise.com. We try and put all kinds of exciting things in there. And then sometimes Kevin is a little mischievous, though. We have the warning at the beginning of the show, although I always say we never really say anything controversial. Sometimes Kevin contradicts me. Kevin, are you contradicting me today?
No, there's no new fans. No, I'm just kidding.
What about welcoming you in, that whole bit? That was pretty controversial.
I don't think my incompetence is that controversial. Any Comic Noise, just a free-flowing discussion of all things that we deem to be independently, comic bookly, and noisily. And that includes some questionable items. You know, we sometimes talk about underoos, that kind of thing, that maybe isn't directly within the comic book spectrum. And I'm going to stretch right here now and say I did enjoy, this is not really Indie Comic Book Noise, but I'm going to count it. I watched the Netflix Bodies show base, and I just requested a copy of the graphic novel from the library. It was a Vertigo book from back in the day, and I thought it was a fun
Bodies.
Show.
I don't remember that one.
It's eight episodes. It's kind of like a sci-fi time travel murder mystery thing.
Nice. Sorry,
boys. I don't know if it's on Canadian Netflix or not, but it's on American Netflix.
Did you guys watch or read Umbrella Academy?
I only the first two miniseries.
Okay. Andrew, you read and watched?
Read and watched. I enjoyed, I mean, they're different creatures, but enjoyed both in their own way. I don't mind when things are different, you know. I mean, there's some overlap, but you can be significantly different.
All right. Cool. My 18-year-old away at college said, hey, would you ever read Umbrella Academy? It's comic related. I watched a bunch of episodes. They're really good. I want to watch it with you. I was like, all right, sure, it'll be good.
Man, you're not going to top-notch artwork. That's for sure.
Well, that's the one thing that the show can't really do is that artwork, but, you know.
I mean, yeah. I mean, unlike Kevin, I like the artwork, so, you know, you get some countering opinions there. Strong recommend.
Great.
As far as, you know, it's really iconic looking and has that fun. I don't know. I think, wasn't he running the imprint at that point?
I think
he was a big famous, it's the musician. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that gives you a certain amount of leeway. And I know normally people are like celebrity comics and roll their eyes. I do that too. But every once in a while, these celebrities turn out to be pretty good, and they can always command really good talent with them.
Celebrities can have good ideas too.
I think that's called hotshotting your comic, or doing a gimmick just for the cash grab, I believe is.
But it was good, you said. So
yeah, yeah.
everyone comes out a winner then, right?
I mean, I like Gabriel Ba as I think at least the first few books. It might have had a recent one anyways.
I think his
artwork was very strong, at least for the first few. Like I said, it may have dropped off. And so that a guy with that kind of strong storytelling chops, I mean, I don't know, maybe Gerard Way had the scripts down anyways, but I think that's the weakness a lot of times when people come over from different media, they end up not having the ability to translate the story into comics. So if you get yourself a strong partner that's great at comics,
yeah.
Overcome potentially. But like I said, he was always good. I
like the Ba. if he can make a fraction story work, I mean, you gotta be a pretty good storyteller.
You like the moon though.
I like the moon too. I like the Ba, I like the moon. I like the cow going over the moon. I like to count sheep. It's all there. Fever trip.
So yeah, I'm unsure how faithful, because both Phil and I discovered that sometimes the comic books are significantly different from the Netflix version.
Yes. How dare they be their own thing?
Well, we've seen enough examples of when you stray too far, often it doesn't work out. So, I mean, that's usually a warning sign.
Yeah. See recent episodes of Marvel Noise.
I like that cross promotion. Super Steve, always thinking, wheels turning. All right, gentlemen.
Andrew has a DC noise, the amount he'll bring up Legion of Superheroes or something. That's the truly controversial thing. We can bring up anything. And then Andrew's just wheeling in this cart of DC books he just read.
Well, I have something very DC comics to bring up later on.
I knew it.
Jeez. All right. While I'm questioning you guys, let me question you another thing. Have you guys talked mm-hmm. about the Duke limited series that's out right now yet? Any of the episodes that I wasn't on?
I don't think we have talked about it.
I think we covered, we touched on everything else. We did Cobra Commander.
Are you reading Duke? Anybody
of
reading?
Of course.
This is from Image, there's three issues out. The third issue just came out this week, I think. And it's really great. It's Josh Williamson writing, right? Tom Riley on the art with the Bel-Air colors. And it's in that shared Hasbro universe. So it and Cobra Commander are the two Joe books that are related to the shared universe, whereas the Real American Hero book isn't, which is interesting.
Yeah, that continues the Marvel and IDW continuity, where this ties in with the Void Rivals and Transformers.
So
Duke's the leader, right?
Yes, traditionally, not in this.
Or Hawk, like back in with the toys, there were two of them. It was kind of, they were the two leader guys. There was Duke and Hawk was like the other guy, right? He was like that, above him.
Yeah, but anyway, but like, I mean, in the field guy that whose toy I believe was more popular would have been Duke.
Yeah. Well, because, and this, what I love about this is you don't need to know Joe. Like, you just need to have the understanding that Duke is, you know, a commando military soldier type guy. So, and it opens up, he's on a mission and he has a close encounter with a Transformer, and it all gets swept under the rug by the government. and he can't let it go. And so he ends up being like, you know, on the run, decommissioned, and they're coming after him and even sending other Joes after him and stuff. And eventually he gets captured, and while in the brig, he meets the Baroness. I mean, this is fun stuff.
Yeah, I will say I haven't read issue 3 yet, Steve, but based on 2 issues of Duke and 2 issues of Cobra Commander, I'm probably leaning more towards Duke as if I had to pick. I mean, I'm reading them all, but if I had to pick one, I would suggest Duke over the Cobra Commander one.
Oh, I wonder if that's because of that secret Cobra Commander thing.
No, I feel that the Cobra Commander book, it's a little bit, I feel sometimes it's going style over substance a little bit. And the storytelling, I know you mentioned the first issue, Kevin, I had a few moments myself where I'm like, well, I guess I'm not good at reading comics anymore. And those kind of moments where I'm like,
over and over. So I'm wondering, I'm like, am I getting worse at reading comics? You know, when people complain, some cartoonists are like, you know, artists nowadays. And I'm like, yeah, sometimes it is seriously a problem nowadays.
Well, I feel it. There's a history of it going back.
Yeah.
And I think it just, in my mind, it's usually someone had a cool image or a cool sequence. And first and foremost, for me, it should be rooted in storytelling. But I'm also can be contrarian to go to one of the other books. And this is going to definitely get me canceled. I'm fine with it, but I don't nearly love the Transformers superstar on the book that everyone loves. And I know that's going to get me in a lot of trouble.
You son of a...
I like how Kevin's just leaving me hanging, but I mean...
Who is it?
He seems like a good guy, a Daniel Warren Johnson.
Yeah, like, I'm not a super fan, but like, I recognize that he's a good artist and everything.
He is my... I feel, again, he's another one that sometimes the storytelling, I feel, in my limited, because I'm dumb at reading comics, gets sacrificed for the cool image in a way.
You know where that happened as well is in that Ghost Machine. It was like, is it Gary Frank? I just remember it was one of those guys. It's like they've been doing comics for years. And they had the thing where the panel crossed over the spine of the comic, but you were supposed to read down. And I'm like, then why are you leading my eye across the page? Like, I was totally out of it again.
Yeah, though that's the and for me on the Transformers, it's more just some of the fight sequences, the sort of extreme distortion of the characters. And I have a hard time. Like, there's a cool image of them fighting, but it seems to not follow the way my head works, which is fine. Obviously, I'm in the minority, as he is well-loved, and I recognize his skills. It's just that, I don't know, it doesn't... And maybe Transformers isn't a more organic sort of book might work better for that, too.
Like Beta Ray Bill over at
Marvel. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Something with some...
That was great.
Where he's kind of the squishy figures and everything work, as opposed to a robot... Where I'd feel like that kind of squishiness isn't, and look, I don't like, I never complain when robots smile and masks move and stuff like that, but I just feel it's not more to my liking. Again, feel free to cancel me. I'm fine with that.
We're all getting canceled this episode with all our storytelling quirks about how things should be drawn. Yeah, I remember. Daniel Warren Johnson talking about learning to draw the Transformers. Because I think he had a promo image and it looked a little different. And he was sort of like, oh, how do these things move and transform? And how do you draw them like properly? Mm-hmm. Which is weird because there's been, you know, so many artists over the years that draw those Transformers over and over. And you're like, you think that would be harder.
If Joe Delbo can do it.
Well, I think there's just a place where you get where your brain, you know, either you're attracted to that kind of those, like anything, you know, some artists prefer drawing one thing over another, but I'm reading all the books. I would encourage people to pick them all up because there's 4 of them, so it's not an extraordinary number. Is but Void I was just saying, push comes to shove.
Is Void Rivals ever going to get any good?
Oh.
That's not good?
How about that?
I don't know. It seems like it's like, I don't know. I'm having trouble grasping on to anything that I give a hoot about.
Oh, that was the one I was excited for, but I had no clue what it was about, except I know it's a crossover kind of thing.
But what, I'm still trying to figure out what it's about, I guess.
Just kind of like, Diet Saga, I'd say. You know, star-crossed lovers in space.
Yeah, no, what does that have to do with anything? It's weird. It feels very Saga to me.
There are cameo appearances of Transformers.
but why? Like, what's the point of inserting these people into that world? Like, I don't know.
Because I otherwise never would have bought those issues.
that's true. But each of those books has to have their own people to balance off. Like, you already have to have the people that interact with the Transformers to play off the Transformers, right? Like, so why introduce a book that's just these people that have nothing to do with anything Hasbro that we know of, and then so that they can interact with the trans, like, I don't know, it just seems cross purpose and unnecessary. And I was thinking that there was going to be so much to it, like, oh, this is going to be a really interesting book. And you're right, Andrew, it really just feels like it's like Saga-ish.
Yeah, well, I think Kirkman recognizes that in the proper utilization of licensed IP, you want to build your own strong contributions, so you have that as a wedge against, so if the property leaves,
fair enough,
like ROM or something, you have all the goods, not all the good stuff, but enough of the good stuff that that's the part they need. I mean, these are somewhat cynical reasons to do it, but hey, they sold a bunch of comics that I don't think that thing would have sold nearly what it would have, but you might be right in that I think it's going to get less and less connected the more it goes. I mean, they're on that little break in between, but the next one's coming out soon. So I don't know if they're going to tie it more in or less in.
More.
That'll be.
I think more. It's got to be more, right? There's got to be a story there. Kirkman's, but what? And why am I still, waiting rather than just giving up? I don't know.
Well, don't talk to me, Steve. I bought all those Walking Dead issues. So when people had long since bailed, but that was mostly for my wife anyways, but still. Had to keep the Kirkman trains running on time. He's got a lot of bills to pay, Steve. Yeah, I'm enjoying all of them. Very different flavor though from the Larry Hama Real American Hero book, which stands on its own.
Yeah, and rightly so.
Which I'm also enjoying, by the way. I feel it's
like
been
the zombie Serpentor doing his business.
I enjoy that, as I think I've said before, Larry Hama's bizarre mix of complete fantasy and realism. You know, they have all the military jargon and the code words and all that, and then you'll have zombies and aliens and all this stuff mixed in a strange way. And the switch, while I enjoyed the IDW and the Marvel stuff, the switch to a new publisher, I think, always brings juice and some new creatives to work with him, and it kind of just makes it a nice boost up a lot, like, oh, you know, gin up some excitement for a title that.
So I wonder, like, if they kill off a character in the Energon, one of the Energon series, they still have the character and can continue their licensed requirements, responsibilities or whatever over in the Real American Hero book, right?
That's true.
Also, I believe that from my understanding, and no expert, but from interviews and everything else I've read, they are pretty laid back on licensing as opposed to where they used to be. Now, the success of the reintroduction of the toy line has increased that, but I think they understand that it's slightly different crews. Now that the toys aren't as, it's not like they're having a mass market cartoon supporting the toys. It's more of a niche kind of collector figures that retail, $25 a pop or something. Like, we've I'm just saying, the audience isn't the same as the mid 80s where it was.
I'm just saying they could be taking risks in this Energon world with what they do with the Joe characters, yes, because of the fact that they still have the other ongoing. That's the air quotes main book. You know what I mean? And all those characters, probably nobody really dies in that book, right? I mean, it's.
Oh, no, they kill tons. The beautiful thing about the G.I. Joe franchise is there's an insane number of Hasbro created and comic book created, and they murder them both gleeful abandon.
All right.
Because the toys ran for so long, there are so many characters. In fact, originally, they mandated that characters be killed or retired just to promote the new ones. You know, oh, we got a new line of whatever, so you need to bump off the old ones so that they get the kids to buy the new ones.
Clear the shelves. Clear the shelves, boys. Wow.
And as people have pointed out, the Transformers movie, well, that was the original thinking, but a lot of children were bummed out at the death of one of the popular characters. So it.
All right, because somebody dies in the Duke book issue 3, which you didn't read yet, so I won't say, but it made me think, oh wow, they introduced this character and I remember having a toy of this character. This is like a regular character, and they introduced the character and killed them off in a big way.
It's not Snow Job, is it?
And I was like, wow. And then I realized, oh, but he could still be alive in the other book.
Yes, so. He can be. And I'm not going to say they haven't done the comic book thing, particularly if it's like one of the big marquee. They're not going to kill permanently Snake Eyes or any of the other. I mean, when they have, they're going to bring them back. But there are hundreds of tertiary characters and secondary characters.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're not going to get rid of Snake Eyes, Storm Shadow for more than a few years tops. But well, those other ones,
yeah. Can't you just get a young version of the character from the future to replace them?
They've done a lot of clones, a lot of the, they have this, I don't remember the name of the machine, but it like copies your entire brain, a brainwave scanner. So they've been able to keep copies of different characters. But again, this is saved for the ones that sell big numbers, not, you know, the, whatever the equivalent of the Spider-Man in this one are. So you can bump off the less popular ones. Wow. With little abandon. And also, like you say, the license is still there, so whenever the next spin comes, they can resurrect those for that different continuity. I mean, it's a fascinating look in how to splice up a license in a way. And I would wonder, I would bet that the Energon stuff is doing as well as the other line, too. But like I said, as long as they keep it manageable, I just don't want it to be like 10 titles and then 12 and then, you know,
Andy gets afraid. 4 seems like a lot already.
Yeah, but that's a manager. And as you guys are pointing out, you could probably at this point drop Void Rivals or Transform. If you only liked one, like if you really like Transformers and don't like the G.I. Joe ones, you probably don't need. I mean, they're involved, but it doesn't feel essential.
Well, some of these things are limited series, right? So
the two G.I. Joe ones are limited. All right, Kevin, what have you got for us?
I got more complaining about panel transitions and everything. Oh, it's going to be a great night. Or day. Or afternoon.
Or afternoon into night.
Long day's journey into night.
Twilight. Yeah, since you went all corporate, I had to go all indie here. I didn't know that this was originally a Kickstarter.
Oh, snap.
I don't know if every issue was, but I got
everything
North.
Is now.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know. People love their $20 comics. From
Is it from Ryan North?
No, I probably wouldn't read that.
Autobiographical comic.
I mean that'd be weird. No, you know, you keep on trying those Ryan North comics, and then everyone's like, they're great, and I'm like, I don't. It gets to that level. It's like the literary novel. It gets to that level, and then you're just like, yeah, that's good. No, this is from Novel Comics. I'll send you the link so you don't have to look for it, Andrew.
Good.
But yeah, it actually has a little thing on the inside that says issues 1 to 3 were done over 7 years. And I'm like, yeah, I think this first issue was done over quite a while too, because it's there's some gaps or storytelling things in here that I'm like, really? Okay. This has it's like the gathering of the team issue. So I mean that's a well worn but sometimes a fan favorite concept, right? You go visit everyone, you see what's going on, you introduce everyone, you're like, oh, this is so good, all these new characters and all that. So it's like a gathering of a Canadian superhero team together.
Now, is this getting the band back together or the first time they're getting together? Because, that's a big different vibe.
I think it's the first time. Although it looks like they've had some past stuff. I'm not sure how. Like, they've had some kind of lives before. Like, there's a robot.
Oh, yeah, the robot had a life before, sure.
I know. Well, that's what they say. The robot's not alive, so it doesn't matter if anything happens to you. We'll just rebuild you. And I'm like, really?
Tell that to the Iron Giant.
I mean, I guess the robot believed them, but I'm like, I don't know. It's kind of mean. Like, the robot's sort of like that Spider-Man, like the living brain. So I don't know. It just seems like he's building pianos, and then they're like they can't really convince the robot to join their team. So they're just like, yeah, we bought you and everything. Come along. And I'm like, if he just builds pianos and he's just a robot, like, I don't know. It's kind of funny in a way. And then you have like a werewolf, and then you have a few different. Traditional heroes like that.
So do you feel like the 7 years as you're reading through it, like, does it really shift?
Well, this is the thing. Like, you start out and you're like, okay, like, they have an action sequence on the CN Tower. So some of the, like, there's less panels and some, like, more splash page stuff or dynamic stuff. There's, like, oh, three panels. And then when you start introducing some of the other characters, I mean, it is more talky, but it starts breaking out like the 9-panel grids and everything. And I feel like this is one of those things, like, you're halfway in and then you're like, oh no, I haven't done like everything I wanted to do. There's all this story I have to wrap up. And then you just start cramming in all these panels to get all your stuff done before the issue's out. Like, it definitely feels like that. There's also, I'm trying to find it here, there's also some storytelling choices in here where I'm like, I'm not sure if that was like the best transition, or like in the spine, there's like a word balloon that goes over like the spine of the book. And I'm like,
Ouch.
Yeah. I'm like, I usually don't see that. So, but, I mean, I'm not surprised because, it's an indie comic. So I'm like, that's kind of strange. But, it's not super, like, I guess if it was collected in a trade paperback, like, you'd probably want to redo that because that's going to get trapped in there. But I just, it's just like an oddity of an indie comic rather than, a big problem.
Gary Frank's like, I didn't mind it that much.
Exactly. Getting the gang together and introducing everyone is definitely more interesting, I think, than the action piece, which is kind of funny. Because it's like the CN Tower thing where people are like dangling and trying to be rescued type of thing. Oh, we're all going to die. But I'm like, I mean, no, you want to get some action in there, but I'm also not super invested in these characters I don't really know about yet. I don't think it's a cool enough thing for me to... Super. Oh, I haven't mentioned who's done this, right? This is written and illustrated by Scott Sawyer, colors by Falk, and letters by Andrew Thomas.
And is this a complete, like, first story chapter and an ongoing, or is it its own thing totally?
I know there's four issues, so I can't tell you if the story, like, resolves itself by that fourth issue. But this is, a decent chunk because I have to intro everyone. So I always think about that too, is like with like a movie or something, like that first one, if you have the origin, like you use up all your space. Yep. And then after that, it's like, what are you going to use that space for, like, after? So, like, the second issue, I'd be curious to see, like, the pacing and, like, all that stuff, how that works itself out.
Sure.
Are you going to try and run it down, or?
Yeah, I have the next one, so.
Oh, nice.
I don't know if I'll do an update or what, but we'll see.
Well, my DC Comics is an update item, and it's a little bit of something for Kevin too. I am almost caught up on my library reads of Black Hammer, my favorite DC comic book.
For shame.
And the part that Kevin will like is they collected his Substack comics, Kevin, in print.
Yeah, so, I've never read those.
Yeah, The Last Days of Black Hammer is available in print.
Hold on here. For like a year, you would berate me and Kevin about reading this book. And now look at how giddy you are talking about it. It blows my mind.
I love giving you guys a hard time.
You made this a non-Black Hammer zone.
Exactly. I banned Black Hammer. You're bringing
too much Black Hammer to this podcast.
Now you're so giddy about it, and you read it all the time.
I do, and I'm almost done. I did want to say the library edition, which I ironically got from the library. Those things are huge, boys. Very oversized. I don't know if you've seen them. I think it's the same back matter that's in the trades, but they are significantly larger and heavier. They had the Reborn in that format, and I wanted to check it out. And that will throw your back out. So I did that one, The Last Days of Black Hammer, which is the Substack, and the Unbelievable Unteens. So all that's left in the main continuity is The End, which doesn't come out in trade till the summer. And the only other thing I haven't read is I requested from the library the Black Hammer Visions, which is the ones not done by Jeff Lemire.
Yeah.
By other, so I'm going to read those and then I'll be all caught up.
Did you read the crossover with the DC Universe?
Yeah. I don't know, for listeners that have suffered through this, I originally had found that weird internet guide to reading. So I've read a little bit of it out of order, but since then I've been sticking with the Dark Horse preferred reading order. I mean, the Visions I'm reading last, but I figure they're not really tied into the continuity. I did like the Unbelievable Unteens. I like Tyler Crook, who was the artist on that. The only weird departure is they decided to really homage like early 80s comics in it and have segments that mimic that, like they put artificial stress and have a lot of thought balloons and everything, which to my recollection they hadn't done. What I had enjoyed about the world is the mashing of all these concepts from silver, golden age, bronze, copper, modern, but told in a modern bent. So it just stood out a little bit that they leaned really it took me out a little bit, because I'm like, I don't remember them having like Silver Age sections and Golden Age, but it is one of the side titles. So I guess that was their experiment with that. But obviously teen group, so probably Teen Titans, maybe X-Men. I feel like this leans more into DC, which hence my joke about DC as far as the pastiche universe he created.
Yeah, well, when the Endless and Starman show up, I mean, it's getting dangerously close.
Yeah, so I would have been fine actually ending it with Reborn. I like the ending there.
Yeah.
So we'll see how I feel about the end, which I'm sure it can't be the end, right, guys? This thing has spawned millions of these things.
Well, it's had the end like what, at least three times now.
So I like that too. But yeah, I Reborn, I'll be fine laying off. So yeah, I'll give another update, but I just wanted to give you guys a hard time and say I'm library reading it all, and Substack comics in print, Kevin.
Oh, yeah, who'd have figured?
It's good you came around.
You'll have a good time. And the other nice thing is these are like really good read, and I don't need to read them again. While I'm really enjoying them, they make a perfect library read.
Yeah, it's just a good trip to take, right?
Yeah, it's because you don't have any real connection or anything. It's just fun watching him reassemble and steal parts. And I think I mentioned Oh, go ahead, Steve.
Sorry. I was going to say, that's what's fun about the Visions book, too, is you realize that all these other creators took the trip and, were fond of it. And when you get their little takes on and their little short stories and snippets and takes on different characters, I found it to be kind of charming, really. I enjoyed those.
And like I believe I've said this before, I really love that when you're stealing from these serial number filed off universes, they avoid Batman and Superman. They avoid the ones that have been done to death and instead feature Shazam and Adam Strange and ones that are easily recognizable, but not the entire thing is about them. I thought it was I didn't get the slightest kind of fourth world vibe, but I feel like they didn't really plumb that very much. Like the Black Hammer, where he goes to that fourth world place, and then there wasn't a lot of that. And I was like, oh, that would have been, I feel like that's rife for the serial numbers to be filed off and played with as well. But I don't know.
Whenever they get to the Galactus otherworldy stuff, I mean, I feel like that's pretty fourth worldy.
I guess, but I got way more anti-monitor from there than Galactus too. For the anti-god. Yep. So that seemed to be leaning more into that and the crisis thing. But yeah, just all in all, a fun time. Go to your libraries, request it, and, we'll see where it takes us. But that's my Substack DC portion of the show.
Well, I did read Black Hammer, the end, number 5.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's still extending. It seemed like it was done, like at issue 2, and you're like, well, it's only issue 3 of 6.
And then it's also, it's like, of 8. And then it's like, wait, what?
Well, it went up to 8 now?
No, I don't know. No, but it seemed like they were adding books.
No, that was good. I mean, there's some stuff, I guess, maybe people wanted to see happen. So, I mean, it's interesting. I don't want to spoil anything for Andrew or anything.
No, you can spoil away. I mean, this is an older one, and it's more of a fun. The twists and turns aren't any kind of shock. It's just, like Steve said, kind of this fun little vaguely familiar universe you're in.
I mean, Inspector Insector is still one of my favorite characters. Like, I don't know what your favorite bit character from all this stuff is, but he's right up there.
Yes, I think he was fun. I like walkie-talkie there. Or talkie-walkie.
Yep.
Fun little robot. Yeah, just fun, silly, good, wholesome comics. And like I said, those library editions, if you really do love this, they are oversized with the ribbon in and all the back matter and all that stuff, if this is your jam. But I think I would avoid them in the future. I mean, I like the oversized, but I don't know how it's a young man's game, those like omnibuses and everything. They're unwieldy for me to read at times, I feel. Which is funny because I like those artist editions and those crazy. Yeah.
The most unwieldy thing.
But you're not really reading those in the same way.
I guess not.
Or at least I'm not.
But they do have complete stories in some of those.
Yes. But they're not the same. I don't know. Anyways, Super Steve, what have you got for us?
Have we heard from Phil yet?
I'm not prepared.
Oh, Phil, would you please step to the front of the class?
No.
And show us your homework. do the next problem on the board. All right, I got one.
Yeah,
Phil, I got one that you'll actually like, I think.
Okay.
And actually, I don't think there's any way that any of you guys will not dig this book. It's from Massive Comics, and it is Sean Murphy as the writer-artist, and it's a beautifully drawn and colored book, and it's Zorro, Man of the Dead.
Oh.
It's a new limited series, and there's 2 issues out so far, and I don't know, if you're fond of Zorro.
I love Zorro.
All right, you're going to love this book. It's finally a really good – this is the best Zorro book in – decades. This is so good. This young boy and girl are orphaned at a Day of the Dead festival in this Mexican village of La Vida. And this village claims to be the birthplace of Zorro that they recognize elsewhere is considered a myth. But like the elderly town leader there knows otherwise and says otherwise. And part of their Day of the Dead festival incorporates a guy being dressed up as Zorro and the crowd cheering him on. And he does like a fake, you know, pantomime sword fight with a villain. And these two kids who are orphaned, their father is killed by these drug cartel lieutenants who have a deal with the town leader and who are sort of really running things. And they kill him in front of the whole crowd during the festival. And it's their father who was playing Zorro. So like, they're like no heroes and they, you know, murder him to put down any thought of, you know, rebellion or fighting back or resistance. So the kids get hidden away and separated. And then we're like flash forward, like it must be a dozen or so years. And the sister, to get by and make ends meet and survive, is working for the cartel as a driver. Not any more involved than that. But the brother was raised in secret by the elderly town leader guy who has a thing for Zorro and trained in swordsmanship and stuff. And the cartel lieutenants eventually visit and kill the elderly guy. And on his deathbed, he gives the young man now a sword that he says was his father's sword and was actually the real Zorro's sword. And this like transforms him. The now grown orphan son, you know, becomes Zorro and starts talking like Zorro and thinking, acting like Zorro, even acting like surprised to see machine guns and stuff. Like he's almost acting like he's being psychotic, but the role is allowing him to do things risky that you might not otherwise think can be done, and manages to do it because he's sort of living a movie. It's like a Don Quixote trip kind of thing. And eventually gets reunited with the sister and she thinks he's completely psychotic. So they're kind of trying to mind him and not get him killed. But at the same time, he's going to lead a revolution and avenge his father, both his fathers, his proxy father after that too, and save this town from the cartel Zorro style. And it's an awesome book. You guys are going to love it.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. It does.
And that's just the first two issues, for Pete's sake. Mm-hmm. And I left out a bunch of really good stuff too. It's a winner all the way around. And the Sean Murphy art is fantastic. So there.
It does sound good. I thought Zorro was at Dynamite.
Yeah.
Maybe that's from a long time ago. Because I think, isn't he one of those public domain guys?
That's what I would think, no? Yeah, that is.
Yeah, I don't know. This is way better than anything the Dynamite would do. And
it was a long time ago when they did Zorro, I think.
Team up with a Steamboat Willie? That would be,
But it's cool here how they're doing it like a legacy thing. So it's like they're not doing a story of the old Zorro.
Fresh.
It's,
yeah.
But he's sort of becoming Zorro. It's excellent.
Good.
Kevin, that'd make a good movie, I would think.
Yeah. It would make a good animated movie with the palette that the colorist is using, which I, sorry if I don't know if it's Murphy also doing the colors, but, you know, with the desert tones and the sepia browns and yellows and dust blown town. It's awesome.
That kind of quick sword work was always fun. Very kind of cinematic too. The fencing style as opposed to like the big barbarian style.
For sure. You think of Errol Flynn, you know? Going up the staircase, fighting guys off behind him.
All right, Kevin, what have you got for us?
I don't know if I should tell you about this.
Oh, I don't know if you guys are good enough to hear.
This is his porn comic.
Kevin's speculating again. He's got a 7,000 copies of this issue he's waiting to.
No, I haven't finished it yet. So I'm like, I kind of wonder if I, because I was kind of looking for something, and then you're like, you know, when you run into that problem sometimes, you read something and you're like, you don't have that much to say about it. So
but
I don't know.
You still pick it for the show, you're saying.
Well, not really. Oh. You're reading all these things for the show, and then something else grabbed your attention, right?
So you're giving us even the dark underbelly of your indie reading.
This is true, because this is indie, so you got to get into that dark underbelly.
With the cross hatching.
I mean, I go out and buy this, because, I mean, if you like Drifting Classroom,
mm-hmm.
I know that's been brought up on here, and you like Kazu Yumez.
No clue what that
you
is.
Need to go out and get My Name is Shingo, which just has the craziest like spot varnish foil on a cover that I've seen in like recent memory, because it's like some kind of checkerboard on here, and I'm just like, how much effort has gone into doing this hardcover? It's just ridiculous. It's not like one spot. It's like 200 spots on this cover. And then there's like foil underneath on the spine and everything. I'm just like, this is the, it's like that Swamp Thing cover. I mean, I can't just stop running my fingers all over it. I mean, that in itself is a ringing endorsement.
You're a sick man.
Oh, yeah, but this is the whole thing. Like, I'm not sure if it's going to become one of those crazy, like, classic horror stories. You know, before the, like, the modern masters of horror, like, I think he was one of the, like, the more, like, the one of the classic manga masters of horror there. This is from Viz, their signature line. And this is a sci-fi story. But there does have an element. It's like if you were narrating your life and you were just like, and then I was born and they popped my two arms on and then they twisted my head on and then they gave me a name. And then you're like, well, that's kind of unnerving in a way. Like, they have that sort of narration where it's talking about events. And then I'm like, at some point, I'm like, maybe if you didn't know anything about the author, you'd just be like, oh, yeah, this is just some robot just giving some dry dictation on some tape about their life that doesn't have any emotion to it, right?
Sure.
And
walkie-talkie.
Then, exactly, walkie-talkie. I'm sure this will be a walkie-talkie situation. And it's so weird because, like, it is set up like... Anyone watch Mr. Robot?
Nope.
Great show. But the episodes were named, like, file names.
Oh, cool.
So... It was like I always imagine like, oh, the show gets nominated and then they're like, yeah, the best episode was like file name .exe *-1 or something, like some crazy name. And they'll be like, what is happening here? Someone's having a seizure. So you open this up and they have like a similar thing where it's like a computer file, like the path to something. It's like C:\data\. And then it goes farther with it gives you some like pixelated artwork. And then it's like program one, birth, appointment, 1.1. So it's like the life of this robot, if you can call it a robot. I mean, the kid in here, seems really excited to see this robot that's been introduced at his where his father works in his factory. But you're thinking he's also thinking like, you know, one of those big giant walking, talking robots. And I'm kind of thinking like that. And then when it isn't, I'm like, oh, the kids are going to be all like not into this, but they're still into that. They're like, oh, look, it's arms and it moves and everything. I mean, it seems like an assembly line type of thing where it's not necessarily like it has a body and a head. I mean, maybe it will. Like, I haven't finished this whole thing. But pretty fascinating. I mean, there's a few, like, I don't know if you could call them time anomalies or whatever in the writing, where it's just, I don't know. Sometimes characters are weird, right? Like they're just like, maybe they're just stressed out, or like, I'm not sure how to take it, if it's just like a cultural thing, or like maybe how people acted in the 80s, or if this character's just like totally stressing out, or this robot. And I'm like, oh, that's why he's kind of jerky or whatever. But I'm like, I don't think that's that big of a distraction. I mean, there's enough of other cool stuff going on, and that sense of dread.
Sometimes the characters just write themselves, Kevin.
I know.
What are you going to do? You're helpless.
I am.
So are you. So how many volumes of this have you gotten through, Kevin?
17.
Only the first volume is out.
Oh, wow.
I know there's another volume, but I'm not quite sure how long this went for. But I mean, like, Drifting Classroom, I think, was, what was that? Like, maybe 11 volumes? Something like that. Anyways.
Did those people ever get out of the mountain on the train, derailed train thing?
Oh, yes. Dragonhead?
Yes.
Whatever that was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. The most of the story doesn't take place in the tunnel.
No. There's a lot of cool set locations.
All right.
Yeah.
Good for them.
I don't know if it's good for them. They're always constantly, they're not really living. They're more like surviving.
Mm-hmm.
All right, then. I think I'm going to finish this thing off with a record-breaking issue. This one's shouting particularly out for Phil. I picked up The Train Has Started Again for one whole issue. I picked up issue 350 of Spawn.
Wait,
wow.
You just spoiled everything. You just said that 350 isn't good enough to get you to get 351.
No, I think it's more me than Spawn itself. A long-time listeners may remember when they first did the line expansion, I was jumped on the Spawn train and got derailed pretty quickly.
There's 12 more trains coming.
The other thing that's weird is, I got to say, the comic industry has won. I didn't bat an eye at the $5 price tag for a, you know, special anniversary issue, so... You can thank Marvel, who has totally blown out any expectation of any, like, that a anniversary issue will be anything under $5 is the cheapest. But this is
pages.
Rory McConville, Todd McFarlane credited with additional script. Brett Booth, Carlo Barberi for art.
I love Brett Booth.
Inks, Barberi and Adelso Corona, J. David Ramos colors, and Tom Orzechowski for lettering. And nice. Now, as I said, I got derailed off the Spawn train, so I was like, how accessible will this be? There's an inside blurb that basically Spawn is in hell and they're fighting over who is going to take over hell. I don't know if you gentlemen...
this is the big battle?
Yeah, want spoilers or not?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, so we get down to some very important characters. Sin, the Clown. Uh-huh. I guess at this point in the continuity, Malbogia is already dead. But
really?
You have one... Okay, I think they did as well as they could. But as you guys know, kind of the height of that 90s Spawn, it still exists in these comics in a way. I mean, we have... modern coloring, which helps, but the kind of favoring image over storytelling is again something that's prominent. But here I think it's a deliberate choice. That's what derailed me on the Spawn train, is I felt like, wow, this really does read like it came out in 1994 or 95, which I think is great if you're a fan, but I was kind of hoping it had evolved and how kind of with the times more. But I think that's what the real fans want. They don't need the posers like myself jumping in. So tons of splash pages, tons of nonsensical. They keep flashing backwards in time. So it starts with one page and then 10 minutes earlier, then a few pages later, 5 minutes earlier. But if you want the big punch up in hell, you have it between Sin, the Clown, and Spawn all fighting for the throne. But because they wind it back in time, Spawn sets up his wife, Wanda, who escaped heaven to live in hell, to be the new ruler of hell.
Jeez.
That's so your dumb. Big spoiler. And so then when she shows up on the scene, Sin and Spawn, remember, this is all told kind of reverse order, which is, again, not the choice I would have chosen, but whatever. So Spawn and Sin finish off the clown, and Sin's about to kill Spawn when Wanda, who's now called Nyx, or maybe she was always Nyx, NYX, Nyxie, NY10, if she's a Hickman creator, she shows up and just blows away Sin completely. And she's like, I'm the new queen of hell. Get out of here, Spawn, and Lady Spawn, and Angel Spawn, and all those ones that got launched, Phil, in the new titles.
Yeah, not launched. Gunslinger.
I did not see Gunslinger Spawn. I just saw Lady Spawn, Angel Spawn. There was one other Spawn in here. There's a lot of them now. I don't know how many. I think that was, while I appreciate his ambition, part of dropping all those titles like that, I found it somewhat overwhelming in a way. Like, this made sense. I don't know a lot of these characters, but I could follow it to the extent that I needed to and got to the end. It didn't have the emotional resonance because these aren't the characters I grew up with, but she kicks Spawn and his crew out of hell, but they have to have an epilogue to indicate where the title's going. And where the title is going is, in his absence, because of his actions, Spawn has allowed the dead zones on Earth to cover the whole planet. So now all the Spawn crew, none of them have their Spawn superpowers. But obviously, from a storytelling perspective, Spawn and Lady Spawn kill like a bunch of demons without them, proving that I guess they don't really need them, like for the low-level bosses, which seem, it seemed like maybe they should have had one demon or something. I mean, I know they're low-level, but to drive home the danger of not having their powers, and then to have them just wipe the floor pretty easily with these guys, undercuts that sense of tension. Or if it just been one dude and they barely beat the one guy, that might have driven more.
Make more sense. Yeah.
Spawn doesn't kind of lend itself to that sort of storytelling in a way. A lot of, like I said, big splashes, a lot of those, Phil, I know you love those crazy vertical panel divisions, which are sort of splashy, but allow a little bit more dialogue. Anyways, Brett Booth and the team have pretty images, and I can understand most of it. But yeah, the big tease is none of these Spawn cats are going to have their magic beans till they figure this out.
And,
but like I said, from what I saw, they don't seem to need it. The two of them wiped out a whole bunch of them.
Well, they are trained killers.
And he has his chains, and Lady Spawn has whatever she has to beat them up. I'm not really sure. I mean, in hell, she used a lot of her guns all the time.
Yeah, well, she was like Al, like a mercenary, I believe, if I remember.
Yeah, well, they also don't really show a lot of... It's only a few pages of fighting, and it's almost all about Spawn. So she just kills her guys kind of off panel, so to speak. Again, I think that's my thing. The kind of 90s storytelling isn't my jam. But I think this is much, like, if this had been how they did the train before, I was more likely have stood on. It felt like it's a real shift in the status quo. It was, I was able to figure out what was going on. It felt like there were stakes and everything. This felt like a much better relaunch than that first relaunch. Because I know, Phil, I don't think you stayed with it either for very long.
No, and I found, like, the only series that stood on its own really is Gunslinger Spawn. Everything else you had to read. Because it was all so tied together.
Well, yeah. So the green world has taken over, and the entire planet is the Spawn. And the nice thing is, for those of you that were following the Spawn clock, it's down to 1 second. So I guess that was the thing. And then Todd has a nice, you know, thing.
I feel like it's been down to 1 second like a million times.
And then they have a bunch of Brett Booth, extremely detailed pencils. Like,
yeah, I like him.
I do too.
His work on Backlash.
And it was all the splash, a lot of the splash, not all, because this book has a lot of splash pages. But I think I would have preferred the variant covers just to see what they look like. My own personal thing.
It's funny, when back in the day I had only gotten back into comics for like a couple of years and was still in college, so wasn't really looking to just buy anything. I was being a little bit frugal when the Image guys left and formed Image, so I didn't buy any of the Image books, really. I paged through some of them and looked at them, but you know, they weren't on time, and it seemed like it was more splash than substance and all that sort of business. And I was really only reading comic books because of the characters that I was connected to and those histories that I knew and all that sort of business. I wasn't really spreading my wings as much at that point again. So I never really read Spawn. The first Image book that I really, of the founding Image books that I went to, was Savage Dragon around issue, like just before issue 50. And then I bought the trades and binged on those and have been buying that monthly ever since. But I never, even though I bought a issue here or there of Spawn, I've never been a Spawn reader, although, and part of it is I didn't meet Greg Capullo and become friends with him until right before he went on Batman, when he was already done with the Spawn stuff. So since then, I've gone back and bought the hardcovers, the Spawn Origins hardcovers, mm-hmm. Of that whole run of Capullo's stuff. And sometime I intend to read those because I want to soak that stuff in, but haven't yet.
Yeah, I just thought this was a nice issue. I think if you're a Spawn fan, it has what you'd want, a change in the status quo, fairly well told, just not enough to hook me. They still stay true to their roots in a way with tons of big splashes and also the whole chains and kind of emo-y thing isn't really my scene. The Sin guy looks like, you know, Lex Luthor and Green Lantern had a kid together type of thing, and with his armor and everyone has chains. I love it. Like every character in here.
It's too many Spawns. Like I liked it better when there was different characters, you know, they were all unique.
Yeah. I guess I probably should have noted, Phil, which exact, but they really feature Lady Spawn, but the Angel Spawn one that has the weird word balloons, that one's in here. And then there's some other one, but they really get like three panels or something. So it's hard for me to be too invested. Redeemer, I think that's Angel Spawn.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Monolith is another Spawn that were fighting with them in hell and got kicked out of hell as a result.
Who would have expected that Jimmy Palmiotti character to show up there?
Yeah, I don't, again, don't know the history of the character that well. I'm glad it's still going. It seems to be fun. And they do advertise at 351. Will be at the $2.99 price point. So, you know, this was the special one with all the extras in it. And $3 comics. Nothing wrong with that.
Cool.
All right. I think that's a good place to end it, folks. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to Indie Comic Book Noise. Kevin, do you have a catchphrase for 2024 yet?
Just cool it down, Andrew.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Catch you later.
Later.